Good evening.
Good evening.
And welcome all. There are many ways to talk about Zazen, our sitting meditation practice in Zen. And I'll bring up one of them tonight. Zazen literally means sitting meditation, but we sometimes expand that phrase Zazen to mean everything that we're doing, even if we're not sitting. As Dogen Zenji, our ancient founder, says, the Zazen he speaks of, it's not a matter of sitting or lying down. It's not a matter of posture. And yet we call it sitting meditation. And when we're doing sitting meditation, we try to clarify what sitting meditation is. And the more we clarify what the sitting posture meditation is, the more it becomes clear how to live the rest of our life. So one way to describe Zazen, the mind of Zen, the mind of sitting, is undividedness, the undivided mind. There are infinite kinds of divisions, and the undivided mind is the one that doesn't include any of them. And we could say that the fundamental division, the basic division from which spring all other divisions, is the division between ourself and our experience. You might have thought I was going to say between ourself and others. And I think that's another big division, but I think that division actually springs from this even more basic division between ourself, what we think of as ourself, like me, and my experience, which is actually naturally undivided, and yet we somehow, with the mind, manage to think that there's some division between me and my experience. It's kind of like the me idea that's the half of this division is a little bit extra, because actually there's just our experience is happening, and our experience is doing fine without the thought of me doing it. It works just very sweetly without me having to think about myself doing it most of the time. But for some reason, we tend to often kind of assess how we are doing in the midst of our experience, or we start to get involved in ideas about ourself. And I think assessment is a big one, you know, whether we're doing it well or not well, whatever we're doing, and whether we should be or shouldn't be doing it, and whether we even are doing it or not doing it, whatever we're doing. So in Zazen, in the meditation practice, it's a chance to actually not divide the mind in such a way. So it's not so much a matter of stopping the division. That's the basic state of things, is a division, and Zazen would be like eliminating it. It's more like the other way around. It's more like the natural state of things is just undivided being. And a lot of the time we're adding in this self that's doing what is happening. So when we're sitting in meditation, we sit upright and still and relaxed, and we get as comfortable as possible. I don't know if everybody's been to the Zazen instruction that we offer here. We emphasize the posture a lot, the upright posture, balanced and relaxed, and sometimes it looks as if it's not so comfortable, and sometimes it feels as if it's not so comfortable. But my personal take on the Zazen posture is that we should find a comfortable way to sit. These classical kind of postures were originally designed to be a comfortable way, so if they don't work for us so well, then we can find a way to sit where we can be alert and upright and have the body open and aligned so that our energy can flow freely and yet also relaxed. And then we sometimes offer various techniques for becoming present and concentrated, like counting the breath in and out, or following the breath, or attending to the points of the posture. And all of these practices are wonderful aids to enter the present moment. But they're not necessarily requirements of Zazen. If they help, then we can pick them up and use them, and if they don't help, we don't need to. I would propose, just for the sake of tonight's talk anyway, to say that the basic practice of Zazen is to give rise to, and if we do give rise to, not to kind of feed and support the divided mind. So in a way, it's something very, very simple, because it's the state we're naturally in. It's the state of mind that resting in itself, and yet though it's very simple, it's quite challenging, because we're so used to thinking of me in addition to my experience, and thus dividing reality, dividing undivided reality into two parts. And as I say, that's the root for all other divisions. So from that springs forth, well, then there's me and my experience, and then part of my experience is all these others out there. So now there's me and others, and that can be a painful division when we feel like others don't appreciate us and so on. And there's me and the rest of the world, and there's me and how I'm doing compared to everybody else and how they're doing, and this is the cause of all our difficulties and discriminations and judgments that lead to lesser or greater degrees of suffering and discontent with life unnecessarily. I would even go so far as to say that if the mind is undivided, it's actually nothing is lacking. That's completely free mind. At the moment of undivision, there's actually no problem. No problem is possible at a moment of undivided mind or undivided experience. Even all the problems we can think of in our life, if we were to sit with in the middle of them for one moment and not divide ourselves from the so-called problem of our experience, then it's just what's happening. Now, if you've heard that kind of thing before, it might sound very familiar, and if you haven't heard that kind of thing before, you might have to contemplate a bit to see if you actually agree, or if that sounds like one of those Zen tricks, some instant contentment with no effort necessary. And in a way, no effort necessary, and yet when we sit down to take up such a practice, we find it's very challenging because we're not used to that. So the effort is more the effort to just not encourage the mind to do the dividing thing, which it often does if we're not paying attention, and even if we are paying attention. So it's a matter of when we feel the division in the body as bodily tension, and then in a way I would say this is a great blessing actually when we feel it, because that's like the universe like knocking on our door and saying, excuse me, you're causing unnecessary trouble in your life by dividing it from what you think is yourself separate from it. And we, the universe, is going to create some pain, physical or mental pain, here to help you see that it's happening, that the division is happening, so that you may be able to remember and then gently, kindly, in a relaxed way, release that division. This might sound kind of abstract or something, this division. What is this division that we're doing, and how do you release a division? But basically, another way to say it is, it's just thinking. Any kind of conceptual thinking is creating this division. So in Zazen, when we see the churning mind creating all its thoughts and plans about past and future and so on, we just relax that tendency and return maybe for just a moment to undivided being. But this doesn't mean that in Zazen there should be no thinking at all. It's just that when we're, you know, churning that thinking, when we're completely involved in it and buying into it, then we're caught and we feel it physically often. We feel the division. So there can be thoughts just arising as part of undivided reality. Thoughts are actually part of the whole, right? Of course, they aren't actually separate, but when we start relating to them as if they're separate and as if they're about something separate, then that division seems to manifest. It seems to manifest because it's not really that anything is ever divided, but it does seem to manifest, and that seems to be a painful situation. And particularly in Zazen, we can go right to this root division. Before even looking at the self and other thing and all, notice how we do this very strange thing of we have our experience that's happening, sitting, maybe comfort or discomfort, maybe cold, maybe sweat, filling up under all these robes, and it's just the experience happening. And then there's the me, the thought of, I wish I wasn't sweating so much, or, you know, this really shouldn't be happening to me, and such thoughts that are like, don't really make any sense, right, if we were to look at them, but yeah, we do such thinking. So there's many Zen stories about undividedness. maybe all Zen stories are about this. But here's one for tonight of one of our Soto Zen ancestors, Dong An Dao Pi. In Japanese, we say Do An Do Hi Dai Yosho. And he was the student of Yunju, who was the student of Dongshan. And Dongshan, or Tozan in Japanese, is the toe of Soto. So he, you know, is a kind of co-founder, in a way, of Chinese Soto Zen lineage and the style of Soto Zen, which came down to Dogen and so on. And Dao Pi is, we don't know much about his life. Not much was recorded, but we know this story where he, his life shifted, and he spontaneously awoke to undivided reality. So he was listening to a talk of his teacher, Yunju, Ungo Doyo, and Yunju said, Zen practitioners should have a reason when they speak. Don't be careless. What place is this? How can you take it easy? Whenever you ask about this matter, you should have some knowledge of right and wrong and what's going on. Above all, don't grasp anything. Basically, just don't grasp anything. Which is another way of talking about dividing. It might sound different, but I'd say grasping anything, mentally holding some idea, is it the same as dividing into this and that, into me and experience? In a way, it's how we grasp our experience, how the me grasps its experience. There's just ungrasped and ungraspable, ultimately, ungraspable experience of life happening, and then, boom, suddenly there's a awareness of, like, there's me in relation to it, and then the me immediately, I would say, inevitably, unstoppably grasps life, grasps our experience as my experience. And that's the beginning of the problem. So here, Yunju just says, above all, just don't grasp. If you grasp, that's not it. Someone who knows the truth will naturally know how to preserve it. Such a one is never hasty or careless. When one has something to say, 9 times out of 10, he remains silent. Why so? Because it may be of no benefit. Someone of thorough realization has a mind like fan in winter, like a fan in winter. And cobwebs grow on his mouth because he hardly ever speaks. So these are these strange images of the mind like a fan in winter. Like, you don't need a fan in winter. It doesn't do anything. It sits on the shelf. It's just in a kind of useless, inactive tool in winter. You can bring it out in the summer, but in the winter the fan just collects dust there. So that's like the mind of a person of the way. It's like a fan in winter, sitting on the shelf, doing nothing. And cobwebs growing on the mouth because there's nothing that needs to be said. But this is not forced. It naturally happens. They're not like, oh, don't speak. It's more like they just have nothing to say. And then he says these lines that are the culminating lines that I think maybe Dao Pi was listening to this part so far and like, I want to be like that. maybe he was inspired by that talk, and I want to have a mind like a fan in winter. And so Dao Pi says, if you want to attain such a thing, you must be such a person. Since you are such a person, why worry about such a thing? And at those words, Dao Pi opened into non-divided reality. He became himself. If you want to realize such a thing, you must be such a person. Since you are such a person, why worry about such a thing? This this word such, called imo in Japanese, is a kind of colloquial expression that means, like in English, such. Like in the sentence, if you want to be such a person, you know, a person like that. And it also means the way things are, undivided. Such, things such as they are. We have a term suchness. So this term, imo, is sometimes used to translate this old Indian word, suchness, which is, I think, one of the most beautiful words of our tradition. Suchness, or thusness. Things are such. Everything is such. Or Suzuki Roshi, our founder in America, used the expression, I think, you know, in to translate or talk about this, things as it is. And you know, people thought that, well, maybe that was his kind of broken English, and they would correct him and say, you mean things as they are? I say, no, things as it is. Things as it is. So things, the world of multiplicity, as it is, one undivided being before the division mind comes and makes a world of multiplicity. Things as it is, suchness. Maybe a little bit off to say things, because it's not so much the things themselves, it's the suchness, technically. It means the way no thing can be grasped as a separate thing. The ungraspability of thingness is what we call suchness. That's a synonym, actually, for another technical term in Indian Buddhism of emptiness. Emptiness and suchness. They sound very different. Almost on the surface, they sound almost opposite. Right? Emptiness is like lack of anything. Like nothing's there at all, just empty. And suchness is like, well, things as it is, sounds like all is just such. Such is a kind of positive term. But in the old Indian description of these terms, they're often said to be synonymous. They're two different angles on the same reality. Emptiness is pointing to just undividedness, indescribable undividedness, empty of any characteristics created by division. And suchness is being in the world in such a way. Actually acting and moving, living life fully and completely without grasping it as such. So we have this kind of double meaning in this phrase. If you want such a thing, you must be such a person. If you want the thing of suchness, you must be a suchness person. Since you are a suchness person, since you are such a person, why worry about such a thing? Why worry about attaining such a thing? Since you are undivided from the beginning, why worry about trying to stop dividing? And yet we do. But that very worry is just creating more division. But this is, I think, a very natural thing in practice, in Zen practice. We come with some intention. We hope that practice will help our life in some way. Otherwise, we'd never end up in such a practice. The irony there is that that very thought is a thought of separation. So, and because it's a long-standing habit, we will probably continue to do that. But we can come. The beauty is we can come with a thought of, like, I am going to go to the Zendo now and practice Zazen, sitting meditation, and we can sit down and just rest in undividedness and forget all about why we came in the first place. How wonderful, actually, I think, to forget all about why we came. And then the bell rings and we get up and, like, oh yeah, I'm in the Zendo. What do I have to do now? And we can go about our life, but maybe there's a little more ease. And I don't mean to make light of this, you know, just resting in undividedness, because anyone who's done any meditation knows that it's not easy. It's just simply because our habit of dividing is so deep. But we have this potential, and I think it gives us some clues that we're on the right track when we just, even for just a moment, we're just like, okay, there's just the experience happening. We're not even saying those words, right? I'm just saying them to make the point, but, you know, there's all those subtle kinds of division are just basically like little, you know, background chattering commentary on our meditation, even when it's going well. But sometimes it's just such as it is. And at that time, it's very relaxing and refreshing, and we don't know maybe what happened there. It's good if we do know what happened, it's another division. But if we don't know what happened, but we're just at ease, then we want to come back again often. So this such undivided suchness is something. It's not really something, but it's our fuel for returning to the practice again and again. Nothing needs to be done. It's just something needs not to be done. But then we can talk about that as the practice. So Dogen, playing with the same story in his basic instructions for sitting meditation, says, turn the light of awareness around and shine it back. Turn the light and shine back. Which is another instruction for resting in undividedness. It's like there's the light that's like shining on things and dividing them up. It's like turn around that dividing light back to this undivided source. It's another way of just saying just rest the dividing faculty of mind and be present without having to do anything or assess how we're doing. Even if we think we're not doing well, just, it doesn't matter. In this suchness, it doesn't matter. and undividedness, actually, how we're doing is a complete non-issue. So just for that moment, turn the light around and shine back on the source of the dividing awareness. Body and mind, Dogen goes on to say, of themselves will drop away. It's like, in terms of this dividedness, we could say there's the body and mind experience just happening, and then the division comes when there's like a kind of a self-consciousness that's like, oh, I have a body and a mind, and this body has actually given me quite a bit of difficulty in this meditation now because it's very painful. And so it's not just the painful body, it's the assessing mind that's saying, I wish it wasn't happening, or whatever. And of course, the mind, our idea of the mind is split off when the idea of self arises. But when we turn the light around and shine back on the source, body and mind, the body and mind that's divided out there from actually the direct experience of body and mind, that divided body and mind of themselves drop away, and your original face will manifest, Dogen says. Original face before division will manifest. And then Dogen follows that up by saying, if you want such a thing, sometimes we say, then he changes the story a little bit and says, get to work on such a thing immediately. So instead of saying, if you want such a thing, you must be such a person. Since you are such a person, why worry about such a thing? Dogen, playing with this old story, says, if you want such a thing, you should practice such a thing. I think the translation we use maybe says, if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. But we could also say, if you want such a thing, sounds good, body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will manifest. I'd like such a thing. Well, then practice such a thing immediately. So Dogen puts in a little plug for practice because this is his essay on practicing Zazen, the practical aspects of Zazen. But we could say, even more basic than that, before we even decide to like take up the practice, we could say body and mind of themselves will drop away. If you want such a thing, then you must be such a person. You must be a body and mind dropping away person. Since you are such a body and mind dropping away person right now, why worry about trying to attain such a thing? Why worry about such a thing? So after Doan Dohi, Dao Pi awakened about to the unworrisome, undivided such, then later he was teaching and a monk came to him and said, how can one stop taking the reflection for the head? So this is same point, right? We see the reflection and say like we're talking to somebody and we think that our idea of them is like a reflection is actually them. We've divided that person into our idea of them versus the indefinable experience of this amazing being that we're, say, talking to. So how can one stop taking the reflection for the head? How can one stop believing that the what appears is actually what's really happening? And Tao Pi says, who are you talking to about this? In other words, are you actually talking to your idea of me right now? Are you asking your idea of me about this? Or are you actually meeting me undivided from your ideas of me? And the monk asked, well, what should I do? And Tao Pi said, if you seek from another, you'll be all the farther from it. And the monk asked, how about when I don't seek from another? And Tao Pi said, where is your head? So is seeking from another is one of the other basic divisions. I'd say not the root one, but as soon as we start dividing me from my experience, and therefore I start assessing my experience, I'm not doing so well, my experience over there is not doing so well, and so I think I need some help from somebody else, and usually we're even thinking about the reflection of somebody else, and therefore we're losing track of the undivided reality, where actually so-called everybody is actually helping us all the time. In undividedness, it's not just like there's me in my undivided world. It's like this inconceivable undividedness is just this almost miraculous. I guess we'd say miraculous from a kind of divided point of view, because it's actually very ordinary. But the divided mind thinks, isn't it miraculous that we can all function harmoniously and be like supporting each other and helping each other inconceivably in this undivided realm, in the realm of suchness? It's actually like that. It's hard to perceive. We think that some people are helping us sometimes and others aren't helping us other times, and we make all those assessments and divisions, but actually we're all intimately resting together in suchness, in one suchness. So thus Tao Pi says, if you seek from another, you'll go further astray from it. How about when I don't seek from another? Then we still have this work of, he says, where is your head? So we still have to, you know, are we still dividing up ourself? If we're not seeing from another, okay, I got it here. Myself, I don't need anybody else. I got it. But that sounds like a division, right? There's still me thinking that I got my experience separate from me. Or actually, it's so, so simple. I think what's being talked about here in this strange Zen kind of way that Zen people talk is something very, very simple. Undivided suchness is just how we are right now. So then the monk asked in the same conversation, he says, well, what's the style of your school? He's already kind of gotten the style here. But I think this is nice because he's talking about the Dongshan school, Soto Zen. You know, these different lineages have these different styles. So what's the style of your particular lineage of Zen? Our lineage. And Tao Pi says in Zen poetic form, because that's part of the style of the school. He says, the golden hen embracing its young returns to the blue sky. The jade rabbit pregnant enters the purple dusk. And these are Chinese poetic ways of saying the golden hen is like the sun, and jade rabbit, the pregnant jade rabbit is the moon. Particularly if it's pregnant jade rabbit, it's the full moon. You know, instead of, we see a man in the moon, right? And in America and Asia, they see a rabbit in the moon. And you can look when you see the moon on a bright night. You can actually see the sideways rabbit with his ears sticking out in the craters of the moon. So the style of your school, of Tao Pi's school, is the golden hand, the sun, embracing its young, maybe gathering together with all the other stars in the sky, the little stars, along with the sun, returns to the sky, the blue sky in the morning, and then when night comes, the jade rabbit moon, pregnant, full, enters the purple dusk of night. The sun comes up at daytime, the moon comes up at night. Things such as they are. And humans can express suchness in beautiful poetry. But the style of the school is very, very simple, very, very natural. Nothing is being done there. Nothing is contrived to make the sun come up and the moon come up, and the sun go down and the moon go down, like Dogen Zenji later said in Japan when he returned from China. And asked, what did he bring back? What did he learn in China? He brought back the whole Soto Zen tradition from China, and people asked him, so what was the deepest intent of what you learned over there? And Dogen just said, eyes are horizontal and nose is vertical. It's a little bit like, the sun comes up in the morning and the moon comes up in the evening. Things such as they are. We might think, oh, there was some deep inner meaning that's horizontal means like has something to do with flatness, and vertical has something to do with like up and down, or you know. But it seems quite straightforward. Eyes go this way, nose goes this way, ears come this way, chin goes this way, zazen goes this way, and so on. And just one one suchness. Yes.
Here's 5 minutes or so. Just wanted to give you a heads up if you wanted to
continue. Oh. Yes. More could be said about our great ancestor Do Wan Do He and the style of our school, and so we'll continue to talk about it forever. and sometimes we'll be really confounded by how strange and difficult it seems, and sometimes we'll feel like there's nothing to it at all. There's nothing to it at all. So, yes? Yes?
I guess it just continues to amaze me. How can something so simple get so complicated and hard?
It's amazing.
I mean, what's your take on that?
How can it get so complicated?
Yeah, how can something so simple get so complicated and so difficult?
It seems that as humans, the reason why such things as Zen practice arose in this world is because we have these minds that are just built for dividing the world from ourselves. And isn't that a strange first split too, that we that our experience is just happening, and then there's the, like the self assessment of it. We could call it self-consciousness. There's a self-consciousness of me doing my experience. And I think probably some other sentient beings other than humans maybe don't have so much of that self-consciousness. So they don't have as many problems. And why that has happened for us, it seems like it's part of evolution that it's come to be. And it has some functions. It has some... There's some benefits to being able to do that, to be able to make that split, to make that division. It's somewhat helpful in some basic ways. For example, it makes planning the future possible. I think it would be impossible to plan even like a minute ahead if we didn't have that capacity. And sometimes it's helpful to plan for the future, even in the most basic ways, like winter's coming, so let's gather all these acorns together because pretty soon they're all going to be under the snow. And I mean, because we're thinking that like I'm going to me, this person who's not my actually experience now, but this projection of a me that's going to exist later this winter, will probably, just thinking about me in past winters, will probably be hungry. And we'll want some acorns. So, let's gather them now. It's, you know, for example. I don't know if that's exactly what you meant by why does this happen? But I think that's how, you know, that would be a kind of scientific explanation of, or evolutionary explanation of how this split originated. And for good reasons, but look at all the trouble it unnecessarily causes, too. Even in that example, for example, like there's just the acorns being gathered and then like suddenly there aren't any acorns. Or like the other tribe took all the acorns from our field and like let's go fight them. And other animals maybe would just die instead that winter, which might be more in accord with suchness. Yes.
But, you know, we know that some animals gather acorns, probably without a lot of planning, but
there might be some kind of instinctual thing where they don't have a self-consciousness even.
So it's the self-consciousness that's problematic.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, and so I don't know enough about biology to know how this acorn gathering thing maybe happens with other animals.
Based on fables, you know, yeah. I guess the ant and grasshopper. I guess the ant that was industrious and the grasshopper. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know.
But it seems like at some point humans, there's something more than just an instinctual gathering. Yeah. There's some, self-concern is another way to say it. There's concern for like how am I going to be doing in the future. And like this winter, and those are like survival things. No problem with that, actually, right? That's again useful. That's an example of how it evolved in a useful way. But then the interesting, unuseful part is like we're no longer like I wonder how I'm going to be doing. I want to be taking care of myself in the future. We start thinking, for example, during Zazen, like I'm so bad at this. Like I just can't stop dividing my experience. And like look, I've never not divided anything for even a moment, and I never will, and I'm just might as well just give up right now, and like, you know, that's just like dividing away like this, and that's the part that's like very unnecessary, and it's just like doing the thing that we usually do, and so it's we all have that experience in Zazen, and yet unnecessary. So may the this simple style of our way continue in this world, and may all beings open to the suchness that already holds them from the very beginning in undivided, unadorned simplicity. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.